What is up, Daddy Gang? It is your founding father, Alex Cooper, with Call Her Daddy.
Allie Raisman, welcome to Call Her Daddy.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am so happy that we're doing this. I'm such a huge fan. I've been a huge fan for a while. To be able to like sit here in person with you, it's an honor. So thank you for being here.
I am such a big fan of you too. And I think we have the same name. Is your legal name Alexandra?
Yes.
Me too. Should we call each other Alexandra?
Should we go by Alexandra today?
Yeah, nobody calls me Alexandra in interviews.
Oh my God, I wonder, like, how did you get Allie and how did I get Alex? Like, where did you go?
Okay, so, first of all, I'm a very big fan of you too. Congratulations on everything. It's amazing. Love listening to your podcast. So my legal name is Alexandra.
Right.
And really, no one calls me that. When I was little, I used to actually be called Sexy Lexi, which is probably weird. But when I was like 5 years old, everyone called me Sexy Lexi. I don't know why.
Okay, Allie.
I didn't know what sexy meant, but everyone called me Sexy Lexi in kindergarten. Like, even like some of the moms around me, too, they still call me that to this day.
What?
And then when I was like a couple years later, I thought my real name was Alexandra. And I asked my mom one day. And she said it was Alexander, and I felt like I had been lied to my whole life because I was a very dramatic kid. So then I went by Alexander for a little bit, and then I actually don't remember where Allie came from. But I love when my childhood friends call me Lexi because it's just like they knew me before everything.
I was about to say, I thought you were going to say, I love when my childhood friends call me Sexy Lexi. I'm like, yeah, I wish my childhood friends would call me Sexy Lexi. They call me Big Al. Like, you got Sexy Lexi, and I got Big Al from Alexandra. Like, make it make sense. I love that for you.
I don't know where it came from. But I was 5 years old, and it's funny because some of my guy friends that are married now, I'm like, I don't think they call me Sexy Lex anymore.
Oh,
but I don't think they do.
Their wife is like, what the fuck is going on?
I know, but my girlfriends do from childhood. It's funny, but now that I look back, I'm like, imagine hearing someone call a 5 year old Sexy Lexi. It's so weird.
Oh my God, you were exuding just like confidence.
I had no idea what it was. But
okay, well, today we're both Alexandra.
Yes.
Queen Alexandras are here.
This episode is brought to you by Corona, the official cerveza of La Vida Más Fina, aka The Fine Life. Corona brings chill, refreshing beach vibes to every occasion. So get yours today at ordercorona.com. Drink responsibly. Corona Extra Beer, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois. This episode is brought to you by Experian. Hi, Daddy Gang. Do you ever feel like there are just too many apps for too many things? I know I do. I sometimes want to chuck my phone into a river and never look back. The apps just take up so much space on your phone, and it is hard to keep the name straight. It's like, how are we organizing all this? What are we doing? Well, there is one trusted name that you already know that can help you do the work of several different apps. Experian. The Experian app can help you cancel unwanted subscriptions, look for car insurance, and check your FICO score and credit report all in one place. You can also compare credit cards and loans. Save time and money by letting their experts negotiate your bills to get you the best price. Experian, the one-stop shop for your financial health. Download the Experian app today. Results will vary. Savings are not guaranteed, and some may not see any savings. Checking your matched credit cards will not hurt your credit score. State restrictions apply. Not all bills or subscriptions are eligible for negotiation or cancellation. Eligible paid membership required. This episode is brought to you by Juvederm. If you're curious about filler and how you can achieve smooth, natural-looking, and long-lasting results and save $75 off your treatments, the Juvederm collection of fillers has six unique gel fillers that temporarily add subtle volume. They're designed for different needs in specific areas of the face, like lips, cheeks, chin, smile lines, under eyes, and jawline. Ask your licensed specialist for a full face assessment and download the Allie app. That's A-L-L-E, the official loyalty program for Juvederm, to save on treatments and get a look that's true to you. Offer terms and conditions apply. To see if you're eligible to save $75 off your Juvederm collection of fillers, treatment, get important safety information, and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com/CHD. That's J-U-V-E-D-E-R-M.com/CHD. Juvederm is not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into the blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Intended for U.S. audiences only.
So I read your article, and to anyone that didn't read it, you're going to read it because you're going to fall in love, and we're going to talk about it today. But you basically wrote an article about being single at 30, and you talk about how it's really not where you thought you were going to be in your life at that point. So there is a lot to discuss today about timelines, comparison, just how hard it is to date in general. But before we get into that, because the daddy gang is going to freak out over that conversation, that's literally all we talk about over here, okay? We need to talk about the Olympics. Mm-hmm. You are going to the Olympics this year?
Yes.
I am going to the Olympics this year. We will be hanging out.
I can't wait.
What are you most excited for about Paris?
I am so excited. It's my first time going, not competing, so I don't really know what to expect, but I'm so excited. And I'm obviously the most excited to watch the gymnastics, and I got to go to Olympic trials last week, and it was so fun, and it's so emotional watching everyone, and I know everyone works so hard. So I am a huge fan of gymnastics too, and I grew up just being obsessed with it and watching it. And so I love watching incredible athletes from all over the world too. And I think that's what's so cool about the Olympics is obviously I'm rooting for the US team, and I think that they look so good and I'm so impressed with them. But I also love how, as an 8-year-old, you know, one of my favorite gymnasts was a Ukrainian gymnast. And so I just feel like what's so cool is the whole world comes together and you just really appreciate just greatness and such incredible athleticism. So I'm so excited. And then I also want to go to, like, my brother is coming and he wants to go to ping pong finals. I'm like, too. That would be so cool.
Wait, can we go together?
I would love to.
I'm like, ping pong, and then also, like, break dancing is a sport officially in the Olympics this year. I'm like, I will be there. My favorite movie growing up was Step Up. Maybe Channing Tatum, hit me up. We can go watch together. He's like, absolutely not. There are so many random things that I want to go see. Obviously, we have, like, the big massive sports that get so much, like, notoriety. But there's some, like, random things I'm like, I want to go see fencing. Like,
I would love to.
Okay.
We'll go together.
We'll go together. Okay. You started gymnastics when you were 2. Is this?
Yes.
I, like, you think about that. I'm like, how do you, like, 2 years old and you're starting gymnastics? And, like, being an athlete, I feel like that just becomes so much of your identity from such a young age, right? But overall, we're going back to the beginning, like I love to do here on Call Her Daddy, because it really paints the picture of who someone is. Like, how would you describe your personality when you were growing up?
That's a good question.
Aside from Sexy Lexi.
I've never been asked that. I think that, well, I was obsessed with gymnastics. I loved it more than anything else in the world. I just always wanted to be there. I'm the oldest of 4, so I loved being a big sister. I still do, but I'm 2 years older than my brother, Brett, and then 6 years older than Chloe and 8 years older than Madison. So I felt like I was like, I just like loved being the big sister. And I remember, you know, those little like cars, the little mini ones that like kids drive around. I just like would pretend I was like the mom and taking them around the driveway. Like I just loved being a big sister, and they used to sleep in bed with me every night, which is just so cute.
Oh my god. Wait, know, where'd so you grow sweet. Up?
I grew up in Newton Needham, Mass.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And I have so many great memories of that. And then I used to beg my coaches to let me stay later at practice. And actually, thankfully, they wouldn't let me because they didn't want me to burn out. But I was so sad to leave the gym. I was obsessed. Like, I remember I would miss Halloween even at a young age because I wanted to be at the gym. I was just like so driven. I think you have to be like born with something a little bit extra crazy in be that intense, but I loved it.
I can see how you being the oldest probably shaped a lot of then like your relationships in gymnastics, because it's like you have this like maternal feeling about you. Relationship like to your parents?
I'm very close with my parents. I still am. So very grateful for that, because the older I've realized a lot of people don't have good relationships with their family. So I didn't realize when I was younger just how lucky I am for that. And I also appreciate how when I didn't do well at a meet or practice, they didn't get mad at me. And they were even more, I think, loving and supporting when I didn't do as well. And if they weren't supportive, I would have never survived. Like, I had teammates when I was younger that were actually better than me, but because their parents put so much pressure on them, they just couldn't do it. And I don't blame them. I wouldn't have been able to do it because I think, our own worst critic. And then our coaches are hard on us. And then you go home and your parents are on you. It's just, so I'm so glad my parents, I knew that if I didn't do well, they would be there for me and support me.
Oh, that's like invaluable. Like I playing soccer growing up, had the same vibe with my parents, where it was like they were so supportive. Of course, if I like asked them like what I could have done better at, like my mom was like, oh, I got you. Like I was watching, but she's not, I'm not getting in the car with a pit in my stomach that I'm going to get yelled at. And I knew a lot of my friends had those parents that were like, the dad was yelling in the car, like screaming, like you've seen the parents that are like insane shit that you're like, whoa, I can't imagine not being able to go home and escape it. And it feels like a full-time job. And we're talking about being like 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old girls. And it's like, it's not that deep. It is. And eventually became your like life. Mm-hmm. But it's also like you have to have balance and order, in my opinion, to survive and to go the distance, or else you just burn out.
I completely agree. And I think that it also, maybe without the parents realizing it, it's, I think it teaches the kid that your only value is being a good athlete or being very successful. And I think it also, so many athletes struggle with their worth being wrapped up in how they do in the sport. And I know a lot of athletes struggle with that. And even for the Olympics this summer, so many athletes, if they do really well, they might not know who they are outside of their sport because that's what they've been doing their entire life. And then if they don't do well, I think it's really hard if you don't have the support or the sort of like mental preparation, if you don't do well, to know that you're more than just your result and like everyone is human. It's really, I think, hard to accept that. So I always feel for athletes when I'm watching, like I get nervous even when I don't know people, or even when I see a gymnast from another country. Like, of course I want everyone to do well. And obviously, again, rooting for the US team, but even if I see a gymnast from another country, like not do well, I just feel so sad for them because it, you put so much into it. And I think so many athletes, their worth is wrapped up in their result.
It is very intense. And I'm curious though, because you saying you love to stay at the gym and you loved all these people, like you decided to go to public school for high school. And I feel like really intense athletes, specifically in gymnastics, they usually get homeschooled. How did you make that decision?
Thankfully, my coaches and my parents were really wanted me to stay in public school. Okay. And I'm actually really glad that they did. I mean, everyone's on their own path. And to your point, a lot of my teammates were homeschooled. And so I feel like everyone has a different journey of what works for them. But for me, it was so important that I could go to school and have that balance. And I can remember I would train 6 days a week, 4 to 7 hours every other day, except Sunday I was off. But then 2016, when I was done with high school, I would sometimes go in on Sunday on my day off. So I was, I'm still exhausted from it. Sometimes people, when I tell them that, they're like, that's not bad. I'm like, yeah, it is. It was bad, but it was really exhausting.
It's bad.
It was exhausting. I'm like still recovering from that, which we can get to after. But I can remember I would train in the morning and I would then like literally be like covered in chalk and like go right to school. Like I was so self-conscious because I'd like be like trying to like wash my body like really quickly, go to school, trying to look cute for boys. I was so uncomfortable. High school is also so hard. I was so insecure. And then I would go to class and then I would quickly do my homework after school and then go back to the gym after. It was just so, I was so driven and so, like, none of my friends understood, I think, how serious I was about it. Like, when I competed in 2012 at the Olympics, it was right after I graduated high school. And I remember my high school friends were like, you never told us you were, like, that good. And I was like, well, I don't know. What do you – I'm like, I don't know. I didn't want to say anything. But
you're also like, what did you guys think I was doing? I'm, like, bad at this thing, but I just get up every morning and go every afternoon and I just keep at it. Like, oh, my God, Allie.
It was so intense, but it's funny. One of my family members admitted to my mom, he's like, I have to admit, I always thought that, he said to my mom, that you and my dad were crazy, because he's like, I would just watch you like drive Allie to practice over and over again. And I just thought it was so odd because I would, you know, miss a lot of days of school. I was, you know, like traveling all over the place. And he was like, I didn't understand how good she was. So he's like, it took me a really long time. And he was like, I kind of judged you. And now he's like, I'm just telling you, I don't anymore. But
wait, okay, hold on. No one knew how good you were. That's kind of interesting, because why?
I still, it's funny when people ask me about gymnastics in my career, like in normal life, like if people don't know who I am, they're like, were you good? I'm like, I was fine. I don't know. I just like, it's just not something that, I don't know.
You, like medals on medals and you're sitting here be like, I think I was okay. Allie,
I don't know.
What do you think that is?
It's so funny. I'm so uncomfortable talking about gymnastics. I don't know. I think part, maybe some of it is that if it's someone doesn't know who I am, then I'm kind of, I'm like excited because I'm like, oh, they really like me for me. There's something about it where like there's no, it makes me feel so good if I'm out somewhere and like a guy is interested in me and they don't know who I am, because it just makes me feel like, oh, they like me for me.
Of course.
And so I think it's that, and I feel more connected to them. It's not to say if someone does know, you know, you can kind of get the vibe when you know why someone's sort of talking to you. But I think it, maybe I feel very guarded, but then also I think gymnastics, I have such an interesting, complicated relationship with it that I feel like sometimes I don't love talking about it in my personal time all the time. I'm doing a lot of therapy to work on that.
No, I get it. And I think being a woman, like we just learn, like it's not even about the sport. It's just about how we are. We just learn in life, like never be too confident because it will come off as cocky, and like don't talk about your accolades because now you're just like drawing attention to yourself, and like that's just like what being a woman is like. And it's like, I'll brag for you, you're amazing. So you did you like flourish with like friends in high school though? It sounds like you had like a lot of friends.
I had friends. I do feel like because I was gone a lot, I felt like I missed out a lot at the time. Because I can remember if I was away for a weekend at a competition, I'd come back on Monday and then I'd hear everyone talking about the fun weekend and everything happening. And so I feel like I can remember feeling left out a lot just because I – or FOMO maybe is the better word. But I felt like I had – everyone was very nice to me in high school and I had a good experience in high school. My friends were very supportive. I felt like people were very nice to me. And so – but I just remember feeling kind of like I was missing out on stuff. And it was hard coming back and hearing everyone talking about how fun stuff was. And I remember being very insecure. Like, I just didn't think that any guy in high school thought I was cute, which makes me so sad when I look back. And so I just remember, you know, any little thing that was wrong, I just felt like everyone was looking at it or everyone was noticing it. But in gymnastics, it's a subjective sport. So I was taught from a young age that like every little thing is picked apart, and it's actually really hard for me in life now to realize that people aren't looking at me like that, like no one cares.
No one.
So it was very interesting, but in the moment I was so in the thick of always kind of being critiqued all the time that I thought other people thought of me that way.
Can you talk a little bit more about that, of like insecurities in high school? And it's crazy to even talk about high school because it's like in gymnastics world, like that is when most women are like really girls. I literally say girls are coming into their prime in the sport, but you're so young. Like what insecurities when you're talking about boys versus then what you're working towards on like in the gym, like what were the insecurities for you personally?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So when I was younger, I used to get made fun of all the time for how muscular my arms were. And I remember when I was in fifth grade, the boys would make fun of me and told me it looked like I was on steroids, and they would call me roids, and it made me so sad. And this has affected me so much that at 30 years old, I have just started to be able to like wear like sleeveless or tank dresses. And it makes me so sad that I wasted that much time. But it's really incredible how, I guess incredible in a bad way, how when people make fun of you, how it can really stay with you. And then I remember in seventh grade so vividly, I was wearing a tank top and some guy told me that I looked disgusting and said my arms were disgusting. And so I literally, actually, this was a big moment for me at Olympic trials last week. I wore a dress that totally showed my arms. And I was saying to my mom, I was like, this is like such a big deal for me that I'm doing this, because I would have been so self-conscious and worried. And now I'm just trying. It feels so freeing to just try not to worry as much. But it's just so, I think that, like as I do more therapy, it's amazing how much stuff sticks with us. And I think that's also why I have anxiety or social anxiety, because I'm like, I hope I've never said something that would ever stick with someone. I would feel so bad. And I know sometimes you know, sometimes we're all human. We all say things sometimes we don't mean, or we don't even realize someone interpreted it in a different way. But I think I'm like so afraid of making someone feel the way that other people made me feel that I'm almost like too hyper aware.
Yeah.
But so that was a really big one. I think I was always self-conscious of like my body, because in gymnastics, they were so strict with my weight. And even though we worked out so much, I still had to watch what I ate a lot. I also want to be careful with saying this because I know how many people struggle with body dysmorphia and eating disorders. So I think it's so important, no matter what sport you're in, to fuel your body and eat a lot of food. And I wish I could go back and tell myself to eat more and fuel my body, but I just felt so much pressure to always be skinnier and skinnier. And it was so unhealthy because I was already working out so much. And it's crazy for me to look back at photos of myself where I was being told to lose more weight. And I'm like, I was, didn't have an ounce of fat on me. It's just, this is for any of people that are athletes. And I'm obviously not a medical expert, so don't quote me on these exact numbers, but I do believe that women are supposed to have a higher body fat percentage than men. And I remember going into 2016 Olympics, I was very, very thin just from the pressure in the sport to be a certain weight. And I was 22 years old. So I was kind of like fighting with like becoming a woman and still looking like a little girl. Yep. And I remember the person who was taking my body fat, they had said that, I remember when I did it. So go back, actually, when I was 16, I had someone else do my body fat, and they were saying that they'd never seen someone under 12%. And they had said like women should be like 18 or 20%. I don't know how accurate the 18 to 20% is. So he was like, so you're probably going to be maybe around 12. And I remember I was at like 8%. And at the time I was 16, and he was like really concerned about it. He's like, you're way too low. That's, and I was 16. And then when I was 22, about to leave for the Rio Olympics, I remember my body fat was at 5%. And I remember the person who works with NFL players was like, he was like, this is not okay. Like, you can get seriously hurt, and this is terrible. He's like, I've never seen, he's like, even the guys sometimes being this low. He's like, you're lower than some of the men on the team. And I remember I was like, I just need you to, there's nothing I can do about it, because like, this is what the judges and the coaches like need for me. Right. I was like, I just need you to be supportive and tell me it's going to be okay. He's like, I can't. Like, he's like, this is so dangerous for you. And I actually feel like my body has never recovered from being that thin and like fighting against that. So it's very interesting, because I can remember I would still eat and fuel my body, but at the same time there was this like trying to, like, there was so much pressure. I can remember, like, this is so gross now. I'm like, I've become more of a germaphobe as I've gotten older, but this is so gross. But it just, like, desperate times call for desperate measures. Like, I remember times, like, literally because there was so much pressure to be thin, I had to be careful what I ate in front of, you know, people on the staff. And I remember, like, I would go into like the airport in the plane bathroom, which is disgusting, and like eat a power bar. So like no one would see me, where that is just like so gross to me now. But when you're so hungry, it doesn't even seem gross. But it was just, so I remember like I would try to eat, but there was so much pressure to be thin that it just was very, very hard. So I was very insecure about that in high school, of course, because I thought, oh, well, the guys think that I'm big too, so that's why they're not interested in me.
No, and Allie, like, it's not gross. Like, it's so sad. Mm-hmm. Like that, like, my heart breaks for you that you had to go into that bathroom and to like eat in secrecy because of the coaches and like the mentality and the rules and the strictness. And like, even thinking of like that doctor saying that to you of like, wait, you're at 5%. Like, do you think you were numb at that point? Like, did you feel anything? Like, what did you feel when someone said that to you and looked at you and said that to you?
I think at that point, because the Olympics were so soon, I was just consumed with anxiety and stress all the time. It's just so, I just constantly had butterflies in my stomach, and I was so nervous that I also think part of it in a way was probably, I don't even remember. I think I was just, at the time I had actually had a really sore Achilles, and I was really stressed about that. That's obviously a terrible injury, and if, you know, something happened, I would be out. So I was really stressed about that. And I remember every morning waking up and like it was so stiff in the morning, and I'd have to like brace myself to get out of bed. Like, there's just so many things I feel like now that I'm done, I'm so much more relaxed. But I remember just being so stressed, hoping that my body would keep it together. But I think one of my biggest concerns with competing was I hope my muscles don't cramp up. And I feel I'm so exhausted. So that was what's so interesting to me, is that I was so good at gymnastics and successful in the sport while I had like so little energy. My muscles were cramping up. I was so exhausted and so fatigued. And I also would, in 2016, I remember a couple years maybe before the Olympics, I would start to get like extreme nausea. And I think because I was so thin for my size, I would like wake up in the morning and almost be like dry heaving because I was like gagging because I was so nauseous. And so it was really hard for me. And it's really hard when you're nauseous to eat. So I just remember feeling so sick all the time that I was so, I think I was numb and I was so dissociated because I just needed to get through it. And I was so nervous. I don't know. It was just such a weird thing. And I'm now like doing a lot of therapy and going through it, but it's hard because you're like reliving that and going through that. And it's a very, it's very interesting.
Well, it's, I appreciate you sharing this too, because I think what's really difficult for athletes is you hearing you say all of this and knowing you are like one of the best and you've won medals and gold and all of it. And you've done what every gymnast dreams of doing. And then there is the dark side of it. And I think what we learn, and I appreciate these type of conversations, is like most people that get to the top of where they're at, there is also just like a lot of pain and suffering mm-hmm. that goes into being the best at the time. And it doesn't mean that it's not a incredible sport and you are so talented. But the reality is, like, there were a lot of things that happened throughout your career mm-hmm. that probably could, someone could have been like, hey, can we do this differently? Can yeah. we protect you in so many different aspects, yeah. you know? And my heart breaks for you, but I think that these type of conversations hopefully will help mm-hmm. future athletes. Not that it's on you and it sucks that it had to go this way for you, but I know there's so many amazing things that came from your career.
Yeah.
But now you're 30 and you're like, damn, yeah. I'm having to fucking peel this shit back yeah. and it is rough, and I can see it on your face. It's like, yeah. this is heavy shit.
Totally.
And I'm so sorry that it's like the thing that you loved and that you're mm-hmm. so fucking good at also caused you pain. And that mm-hmm. is relatable and sad and fucked up. And it's tough. Like, it's yeah. tough hearing you say it. And I appreciate you even saying it, because I can imagine it's terrifying to even admit this yeah. because now is the headline just going to be like negatives about it? And I hope people don't see that. It's just like, no, this is just the reality.
Yeah.
This is the reality. And that's why I hope when we watch the Olympics this year, it's understanding that, like, having grace for these athletes when someone doesn't perform at their best, it's not just because, oh, they had an off game or they had an off, like, no, they're, listen to what you're saying. The body, the pressure, the half of it is just the mental.
I know.
People forget, like, this is, we are human beings. Like, there's so much more that goes into this than just the minute that the person is standing at the top and about to do the beam or what. It's like,
it's so stressful.
It's so stressful.
It is. I like, it's oh. funny because the Olympics are coming up. I like am having dreams that I'm competing and I wake up, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad I'm done. I mean, look. Like you mentioned, there's so many beautiful things that have come out of my gymnastics yeah. career, but it's also, it's such an interesting time right now. Obviously, as the Olympics comes up, I'm so excited and I can't wait. And I've been doing a lot of actually exposure therapy right now mm-hmm. where, for people who don't know, it's sort of like exposing yourself to the trauma or whatever it is that has caused you stress or pain. So that could be, if you had someone that hurt you and they wore like a specific perfume or a cologne, like maybe you like smell the cologne or the perfume every day to like remake better memories with that. Mm-hmm. Or it could be, you know, writing down a memory or talking about a memory or watching something. So I've been doing that a lot and that's been really helpful. But it's kind of like sometimes it can make things worse before it gets better, or I'm like, oh my God, I have so much to work through. It's so overwhelming. There's just so much there. And then there's stuff I forgot about that now I'm like,
it's coming back yeah. up. I was going to say, like, I think a lot of women write in about therapy, and everyone has like a different journey with like what type of therapy will work for them. And I think the exposure therapy is like has been known recently to be very effective. But I was going to ask you, like, in doing that type of therapy, do you have to be strategic? Like, if you know you're going on a long trip coming up, like if you're going to Paris, like, are you doing sessions while you're in Paris? Are you doing it before? Are you too anxious around this type of, like, we're talking about gymnastics right now, and that's the crux of the trauma. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
such a good question. Yeah, it's so we actually have stopped doing the exposure homework. So what I do is I do therapy every week, and then I would try to do exposure a little bit every single day. But because of, I had mentioned before, like my body's never recovered. I've struggled with some health stuff, which we can get into after, from just like the overexhaustion of what I put my body through. So depending on the day, however, because there are so many actually like exposures of, you know, whether it's doing interviews or even going to Olympic trials was actually such a wonderful experience, and I'm so glad I went, but I was so nervous, and just like being back in that environment, like certain smells, or even like there's like a bell that rings before you compete, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I haven't heard this in so long, like all these little things. So I'm stopped the actual exposure homework in therapy, but I feel like I'm being exposed in throughout a lot of different things right now. So we're doing baby steps and just working on like ways to cope with some of that stuff. But it's been, it's really interesting. And I'm glad like my therapist has really worked with me. Like, for example, there was a person's name that someone who had abused me, that their name was so triggering for me. And so like anytime I'd be with someone and they'd mention their name, not about the person, but maybe like their friend or someone they're golfing with, I was just like, I'd feel this like feeling. And so I would read a children's book with his name that was just like, or I'd read a book about an athlete that had the same name. So it's like getting used to that name in a more positive way. Yeah. And so I feel like my therapist has done such a good job of meeting me where I'm at, because in the past, maybe another therapist is like, just tell me all about your trauma. I'm like, let's just start with the children's book. Right. Like, I'll watch a little kid's show, something to like baby steps into it. And I've learned there's no right or wrong way. And I think like I have so many people come up to me all the time and share their stories of like being a survivor of abuse or their mental health struggles. And I always will say to them, like, if you're having a tough day, it's okay to watch your favorite show on Netflix or whatever it is. Like, it's okay to just like give yourself a break, because when you are, people don't realize when you've experienced trauma, you have PTSD, you're going through it, even if you're on the most beautiful island in the entire world, you are not there mentally sometimes, and you're just like reliving your trauma over and over again. And so I always try to validate people's experiences, because I think so many people don't understand trauma and like the mental side of it and how hard it is to be present when you're going through a hard time. Like, even if someone's hard time happened 10 years ago, you still could be living it every single day. You still could be super paranoid. You know, PTSD is like not one size fits all. It affects you in so many different ways. You could be totally fine, and then there could be like, you know, someone's body lotion reminds you of a smell and it brings you right back. And so I think that we all just have to talk about it more, so we're all more aware of like how much people are struggling and dealing with, and give people grace, because sometimes you just need to, it's okay to just be home and take time for yourself. So I'm glad my therapist has kind of given me permission to just like take it really baby steps, and she's really good about like taking a break and now finding like good coping ways if I feel stressed or something.
No, and I love you sharing that too. Thank you, because like I love how you said, like, I've had certain therapists that tell me one thing, and it's like, it's okay if you do not vibe with a therapist. It's like dating, get out. And it's not something like personal, too. It's right? Because it's like, it doesn't even mean that person's a bad therapist. Of course they're a bad therapist, but it really is a match of like, there are people, there are certain even techniques. Like, you can't have a therapist asking, like you said, a certain like way, and maybe that works for someone else. You just have to like, it's not linear with PTSD, and you have to just figure out what works for you and being like easy on yourself. But I also just want to say, like, thank you for even just like talking whatever you feel comfortable, because I can imagine it's fucking exhausting though. Just hearing you speak, Allie, like you're so wise, but it's like you are 30 years old. Like, you're so young, and I can imagine it's like a lot of fucking pressure when people mm-hmm. want you to speak up and like be an advocate and be the face of it. And it's like you still have your shit that you have to work through. Like, I hope that you know that like it's not on you like always help other people, and like you focus on yourself in Thank moments you. Where you, I can imagine so many young girls coming up to you is amazing, but it's also like you can't help them if you're not good.
Thank you. I do feel a lot of pressure, and I care a lot. And I've even had male CEOs pull me aside and say, I was abused as a child. Wow. And thank you for saying wow. something. So I've had a lot of men come up to me and share that. And I think that what's so hard about our world is that there are so many young boys and men who are survivors of sexual abuse, and they don't feel comfortable saying anything because our society doesn't, like, there's so much pressure on men to be so tough and be manly, and the statistics are so alarming, but there's also so many, I think it's actually so much more than that. There's so many people who are really suffering in silence, and I have some people sometimes who I'll be in the grocery store and they're like, my abuse happened 50 years ago. You're the only person I've ever told. And so I can't even tell you how much I've had to work on in therapy of like not overthinking what I say and worrying, because I know from personal experience when we share what we've been through with someone and it's the only person, the first person, like that is so correlated to how they're going to heal, is being validating to them. So I felt so much pressure, and now I have found that when I'm honest and just real with them and just supportive, that people are always like so understanding. And I think people who have been through hard times always like give people the benefit of the doubt and are there for each other. But it has affected me so much. And it's interesting. I've never actually shared this publicly at all, because it's been something that I deal with, I'd say, most days. And I think that I've thought about this a lot, where I think that if I didn't train so intensely my whole entire life and I didn't experience trauma in my, you know, teenage years and younger years, I have actually been hospitalized several times for just like my body has. I read something on Instagram that I think really encapsulates it. It says, if you don't pick a day to rest, your body will pick it for you. And it's happened twice where it's been like this intense, but I feel like I have different minor issues as well, depending on what I'm going through at the time, but where like I have literally stroke-like symptoms. I can't remember my name. I'm like slurring my words. I can barely speak. Both times I was tested for a stroke because like I literally couldn't move my body. It was so scary. And the first time the doctors had like absolutely no idea what it was. And it was so scary because also my abuse happened with the doctor. So the first time it happened was during COVID. And so they wouldn't let my mom in the ambulance with me. So I was also, it's really interesting because I can understand what someone is saying to me and asking me. Like, I know they're asking me what my name is, but I can't remember my name or say what my name is. And I was aware enough to know, like, oh my God, I have two men that I can't move my arms and my legs. I can't move my body. I can't speak. Like, what if they take advantage of me? And so that at the time, this was years ago during COVID. So I was like really still struggling a lot with PTSD, where people don't realize how much it still lives with you when you've been through something traumatic. So that was really hard for me. And then it happened again a little bit over a year ago, where it was like it actually was in the hospital for 3 days. And like, they obviously don't keep you in the ER for 3 days for nothing, but it was really scary. And I remember like they wouldn't release me because I couldn't like sit up on my own. It took me so long. I needed help like walking, going to the bathroom. Like, it was just the most to be able to go from being like an athlete and being able to push myself so much to being able to literally not even be able to like move my fingers, move my legs. I had like complete like body paralysis, and not even to know like what my name is. It was so scary. And it's something where like on a daily basis, like I have to manage making sure that I'm not like, because stress exacerbates it. Like, what I have is a real medical thing, but stress makes everything worse. So I have to like be very on top of my therapy, but then also my therapist has to work with me of like, if I'm starting to feel off, like I just don't do the exposure stuff. So it's very, it's very hard and very interesting because I'm also, like, to your point, I'm very young. So to have something like that happen was very hard. And then also when I went both times, actually the second time, they didn't know who I was when I first got to the hospital, which is totally fine. That shouldn't matter. And the only reason why I share that is because my mom had said that they kept coming in and asking me to, like, lift my legs and I couldn't. They kept saying, "What's your name?" And I was kind of just like, it almost like even like lifting my finger would like take so much energy that I couldn't even, like, I just was so out of it. And they kept kind of like rolling their eyes and not really paying much attention to me. And then finally, my mom was like, "I really hate to do this, but you guys are like ignoring her. I think you think she's like, I don't know what's going on, but you should treat everyone the same way." But she's like, "I just want to tell you because you're not believing her, but just to give you a perspective of how like abnormal this is and how freaked out I am." She was like, "Do you know who Allie Raisman is?" And they were like, "Yeah, we know who she is." And my mom was like, "Well, that's her." And then they were like, "Oh my God." And then from there, they like took such great care of me and were there for me. And I'm like, it's, I want to share that because it's appalling. Like, it doesn't matter who you are. Everyone deserves to get excellent medical treatment. And I don't know why they were like rolling their eyes at me or thought I was faking, but it wasn't until they realized that I was a very high level athlete that they were very nice to me and taking care of me, which is just like, that's also triggering for me because I already have trust issues with doctors. So it was just really, it's been a very complicated thing. And then I also have anxiety, like, what if I don't feel well again? Because there's the fear of, like, when I'm in Paris this summer, I'm going to be so busy, there's going to be a lot of triggers, I might see someone that maybe didn't protect me in the past. And so I always am just like, so it's working on that. It's very complicated. So I know that was a lot, but
no, I first of all, I want to just like pause and be like, I'm so sorry again, because yes, you like went through it all. And I'm like, yeah. Allie, wait, I want to like hug you. I'm like, I'm so sorry. Hearing the effects of what happened to you in the past still live with you, I think is so important to highlight, mm-hmm. because it's infuriating when people, and there are ignorant people out there, mm-hmm. that believe that, like, well, it happened so long ago. Yeah. What, why aren't, like, and you said you went to therapy, like, why aren't you better? Like, this is with you for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And not that it is going to define you, or not that you can't, mm-hmm. like, live a happy life, but like, this happened to you and it was so traumatizing that this is like, this is going to impact you. This is going to impact, like, you, like, I want to talk to you about your future relationships, yeah. and all of that we're going to get to. But like, I just think it's important to have these conversations though, because it's like educating people on the concept of like, this lives forever and this isn't something that goes away. Yeah. And those photos that the entire world remembers of all of you standing there together and speaking up on this, that was like day one of the beginning of the rest of your life of like trying to heal from this. And so like, you talking about these effects, I think it's really important. And it is like, it's I think important we're having this conversation around the Olympics of like, there are so many newscasters and broadcasters and people that stand, and it's almost like the athletes are like horses. It's like, go, like, everyone go, like, win. And it's so fun to watch. But we have to stop like neglecting to acknowledge that like, these are also the realities. And it doesn't take away from the beauty of sports, but it's the reality of a lot of the things that are happening behind sports. And it's on all of us to listen and to now, like, whenever someone sees anything happening again, like, someone better stand the fuck up. And I hope that this is like, again, it's not your job to educate these people, but I hope this can change the culture slightly. And I believe it will. I believe the two of us sitting here and continued conversations, like, I believe this will empower people to speak up. But it's fucking hell. And it's a lot. It's a lot to go through as you're sitting here. I'm just like, I'm so sorry. There's no right thing to say other than like, I hope people can listen to you and hear you and know at home if they have endured anything similar. Mm-hmm. We see you. Yeah. And it, and anyone that's trying to say, well, it happened so long ago. It happened when you were 5. Yeah. Oh, well, then it's definitely with you forever. Yeah. Like, this is ingrained in you and you can get through it, but don't feel like you have to get over it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think also both can be true. Like, love gymnastics, and I have so many wonderful memories with my teammates, and I'm still so close with them. And there's been, I'm so proud of my gymnastics career, and I'm so excited to watch the Olympics. But then also, it could also be true that there was also a lot of moments that were really hard for me, and I still struggle with it to this day. And I also think, to your point of, you know, whether someone, I think a lot of times people will naturally, I think, when people have been through hard times, we'll be like, well, mine wasn't as bad. We kind of justify why it's not as bad. So I also want anyone who's listening to know, like, don't compare your experience to mine, whether your abuse happened one time or hundreds of times or thousands of times. Every experience is real and valid, and it all affects us in different ways. And you didn't do anything wrong, and it's not your fault. And just know that if you're struggling, and to your point, if it was 10 years ago, yesterday, 50 years ago, it's okay to still feel however you're feeling. I think that there's not enough people telling people that have been through hard times that we all are on our own path. And, you know, also I think sometimes people might not be ready to do exposure therapy, and that's fine. It took me a really long time to be like, I'm ready to take this on, because it's really hard to open stuff up. And I think if you want to, it's important to find a therapist who will, like, really do baby steps with you. And also, I'm here to validate. I get so annoyed when people ask me why I'm tired. I just, like, can't stand it, because I also think, like, why do people need an excuse to be tired? You have no idea what someone's going through. You could have, like, the most, you know, incredible job in other people's eyes, but if you're having anxiety, if you're stressed, we have no idea what people are dealing with at home or in their personal life. And I just think stress can be so exhausting. Like, I have seen the way that my stress and trauma has affected my health so much, to the point where it has made me so careful. Like, when someone's like, I'm tired, I'm like, that's cool. Like, just go rest and take care of yourself. But I think people can be really judgmental. We're judgmental with ourselves when we're tired, but we're also judgmental when with other people, I think. And it drives me nuts, like, when someone's like, well, why are you tired? I'm like, I don't have to explain myself to you. Like, you have no idea what I'm dealing with. And also, like, this would probably shock people too, but I barely have worked out in 8 years because my body is just, like, so tired. And it's interesting, like, I don't recover because of the similar with the hospital stuff. Like, my body doesn't recover the way that it used to. So if I were to run even for, like, a couple of minutes, like, it might actually take me, like, several days to recover, or I'll get, like, a migraine, or I'll get super nauseous. So, like, I just have to be very careful and get very creative with how I take care of myself. But I think that, you know, for people who are obsessed with working out, like, they might be like, well, why don't you work out? Like, and my favorite is, like, when I'm, it's funny when you talk about dating, like, when I've dated guys, a lot of them are like, but if you work out, you'll feel better. I'm like, no, I have, like, a full on, like, medical diagnosis, and, like, I'm going to be okay. Like, my doctor is, like, confident that it's not going to get worse because I'm aware of it and everything. But I'm like, I just, because you might feel better working out, like, right now for me, it literally makes me, like, almost, like, vomit and I get a migraine. So I just have to do, like, I might have a good day, but sometimes when you have a good day as an athlete, I, like, push myself too much and then I'm exhausted. But people, it's been hard with dating to get a guy to be very empathetic and, like, know how to, like, be there for me if I don't feel well. Like, people don't always know how to, like, handle it well. And my mom is so good at it. Like, in the times where I've gone to the hospital, my mom, instead of being like, you're fine, because that's also the worst, you're like, I'm not fine,
right? You're like,
I'm
not okay, like, shit, no, yeah, I can't walk,
yeah. So when my mom will always just say, they're gonna help you, like, it's okay, I'm here for you, they're gonna help you. And that is just, like, everything I need to hear, because it's like she's validating, like, this is crazy and we're gonna figure this out, we're gonna help you. But she's also, like, there for me and encouraging me. But other people just, like, don't know what to say. They're just like, just breathe, you'll be fine. I'm like, no, I literally am laying on the floor, I can't move my body.
I think sometimes, like, note to anyone that finds themselves doing that, which I understand maybe you're trying to help, but it's like, sometimes not saying anything but being like, I'm here for you, is all you need to do.
Yes.
Like, stop trying to solve the problem. Why are you tired? Because I'm depressed, because I'm anxious, like, whatever it is. Just saying, like, I'm here for you, let me know if you need anything, like, and shut up.
Yes.
Just shut up.
Yes.
Like, sometimes people, it's like, read the room, like, just stop. Your dating life.
Yes.
And let's, I want to talk about this because it is all intertwined. And I think there's so many young women that listen to this podcast that, like, it's hard because when people write in and ask me questions, I wish all the time I could sit there and answer all of them being like, well, I need backstory. Like, mm-hmm. what was your upbringing yes. like? It all is affecting mm-hmm. when you're trying to date and the men that you're picking or the women you're picking or whoever you're picking. Mm-hmm. So obviously you're in this moment of your life right now where you're kind of trying to like process separating, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like kind of process separating your identity from mm-hmm. gymnastics and then separating that of like Allie and like the adult woman you are today. And like mm-hmm. you're trying to separate that. And in dating, that's like a third head that's popped up that's like another beast that you have to take on. Mm-hmm. In this article that you wrote, it was so brilliant and beautiful. When I read it, I was like, I wanted you to read the whole thing today, but I'm not going to make you do that. But I have a card that I printed out that has a couple lines okay. from your article that I want you to just Ooh. Read because I thought it was so profound and accurate. And when I was reading it, I'm like, yes, 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 yes. So if you don't mind just reading yeah. this for the daddy
okay.
game.
Okay, yes. This is actually my favorite part.
Me too.
That's this was like one of the first things that I had written. Okay. I've lost count of how many times people have told me, you're too picky. You're difficult. Your standards are too high. Give them another chance. You're probably intimidating him. Maybe you should make yourself smaller. Your biological clock is ticking. Don't you want to have kids? You should put yourself out there more. How are you still single? Rarely am I asked, how are you? How do you feel with your partner? Do you like the person you are when you're with them? You're single? That's great. It's so important to take time to figure out who you are.
Preach, bitch. Like, what the hell? When I Thank read you. That, it felt like it, it was so, like, truly emblematic of every young woman's experience with society yeah. of like, wait, give him another chance. Like, why don't you? And it's like, because I don't like him, because he makes me feel like shit, because it's toxic. Like, there's just so many things that women yeah. go through in their 20s and 30s when they're trying to find a partner. And so I want to talk to you, first of all, like, why did you decide to write this article? And I'll link mm-hmm. it in the description, Daddy Gang, so you guys can all read it because it's amazing.
You're so sweet.
But Thank why you. Did you decide to write that?
This episode is brought to you by NARS Cosmetics. Daddy gang, let's talk bold lipstick looks. I remember one of the first times I did a bold lipstick look was going to an event. I was so nervous because I'm like, oh, I don't know. Am I a bold girl? Like, I don't know if I can pull this off. And I remember looking at the pictures being like, oh, who is she? I'm kind of loving it. I felt like I could conquer the world because I was like terrified. And I'm like, oh, that was actually easy. I stepped outside my comfort zone and look, I actually loved my look. To put it simply, I love a bold look and NARS Cosmetics does too. That's why they want to celebrate that transformative confidence with their new explicit lipstick. You can get a wide range of fearless shades with long lasting comfort in a satin finish. Shop now at NARSCosmetics.com. This episode is brought to you by Sephora. Hello, Sephora. Hi, love of my life. Daddy gang, let's talk about hair care. I am someone that is constantly highlighting my hair and I'm putting a lot of damage potentially to my hair. So I'm always constantly trying to make sure that my hair is as healthy as it can possibly be. It is very difficult though to find products that I actually like and that I keep going back to. So it's a good thing Sephora has hair care that really works. They've got products for every hair type from brands like Amika to Kérastase and K18. Okay. Sephora, good news for great hair. Click or tap the banner or visit Sephora.com to shop now.
I feel like I'm always trying to think about ways of how I can talk about things that are important to me, but it's also really important to me to be relatable, and I want to be relatable. And I know that so many people are going through so much different stuff. And I know for myself that I do feel the pressure. I love my parents, but I've literally had to tell them, like, you can't, I like, yeah, like every time they would be like, well, we really want to have grandkids. I'm like, I would love to be a mom one day, but like, you can't control when you're going to find the right person. And I'm like, I love you guys so much and I would love to give you grandkids, but let's just take a beat. And so they, like, I told them one time and now they now it's like totally they fine. But they're so well intentioned. They're of just course. Excited. But I also will tell my mom and dad stories like when I don't have great experiences with dating. And because I want them to understand, it's not easy to find that right connection. Yeah. And I think it's a very different time than when they were dating, when they were younger. And I just know that there's a lot of people who feel the pressure to find someone. And I think that especially in this Instagram social media world, there's so much pressure for like this perfect relationship. And we want to post the most perfect version of ourselves. And, you know, no matter who you are, nobody's life is perfect. No one's relationship is perfect. But I also think it's kind of interesting to me. It almost feels like there's this like pressure that in our late 20s, we're like supposed to find the right person. And I feel like the odds of us all finding that right person is just not realistic. And I wanted to sort of be a part of the narrative of trying to change that because it is so much pressure. And I feel like even I was just for July 4th weekend, I was with friends and just like the amount of people that were like, are you dating anyone? And I'm just like, I now, no matter what, am like, oh no, I'm not. I just don't. I also kind of feel more guarded and protective because I've shared so much publicly that I'm very protective over people that I date in my relationships just because it should be sacred and special. And I think that it is. It's really hard to find that good fit. And I also feel like, you know, I've gone through so much that I didn't really have the confidence to know who I was. And I feel like now I'm like just feeling more confident. Right. And it's really interesting because I feel like now I'm finally at the point where I feel like when I was younger dating in my early 20s, it was so hard in the early 20s because I was so afraid to like
tell me about it.
Even tell them like, wait, this makes me uncomfortable or I don't want to do this. And now it's so interesting. The more I communicate, whether it's like from the first date or the first text, they're so like they're more into me because of it. Right. It's really interesting. And I feel really grateful for that because it makes me feel I feel like very quickly I realize who actually is really supportive and understanding. And it makes me, when I do communicate what would make me more comfortable and they're like totally fine with it, in fact, go out of their way to do that, it just makes me feel so much safer with them. So it's I'm going into dating very differently now where I'm not as afraid to be like, I really would like this. This would make me feel good. Where I was so afraid. I think I was afraid they would leave. And then you know, and it's
actually
not right.
Like, amazing. Thanks for letting yes. me know. I think that's so relatable. And thank you for sharing that because boundary setting with a romantic partner. And when I say romantic partner, it could be your first date. Like you're trying to come off like, you know, fun time girl. And like you want to not bring like your baggage and be like, when do we have this conversation? And there's so many things that everyone wonders. Like I was having a conversation with my sister recently. We were having fun girl talk and like she was asking me a question and I was like, this is such a good question. Like she's dating and she was like, is it weird if I bring this up here? And I was like, I don't think so. But you know what? If you do and he acts weird, leave the date. Yeah. Like there's so many things that you second guess yourself for when you are dating. And I think it's so understandable because there are so many pieces of shit out there that can make you feel small and that can make you feel insane for bringing something up. And to have you now realize like, oh my God, I said what I've always wanted to say. And like, I was just met with like, amazing. Like, thanks yeah. for letting me know. And you're literally like, wait, but you probably couldn't have done that back then, not because you weren't actually capable of saying those words. It's a confidence thing. And it's like a learned habit that you just have to like exercise the muscle more to become, because it's actually not about them. It's all about you. It's about you being able to sit there and to advocate for yourself and be able to even express that, because maybe in your early, early 20s, you didn't even know you needed that.
Yeah.
You knew it was uncomfortable, but you didn't know why or like what to say or what, if you didn't want that, what did you want? Now you're like,
yeah,
she's figuring it out. I'm interested, like, have you ever kind of like continued seeing someone because you just felt like you were behind and you were like, fuck it. Like, I'll just keep kind of like, I'll go on another date because I'm single and like whatever, before you kind of like got to this new
realization. Yeah, it's a good, I feel like, yes, I have, but it's, okay, someone told me recently and it really helped me, because I was saying, I was like, oh my God, I'm like so like cringing that I dated this person for so long. And they're like, if you're not looking back and cringing, you're not growing. And so I was true. Like, that is what I needed to hear. That made me feel better.
Let's pause on that for all the daddy gang. If you are so embarrassed by an ex of yours, me included, let's all pause. And you're so right. It just means growth.
Oh,
it's growth.
Gosh.
Thank God we're all cringing, being like,
But I'm just sometimes like horrified at the stuff that I would put up with, you know?
Can you give me an example? Like, yes, obviously, we're not talking specific people, but just like a little example.
I feel like it's interesting. Something that I've struggled with dating is that in the beginning, the guys are like really great. Okay. They're happy. They're chill. And also to what we were talking about before, I want a guy to communicate to me what they want too. And I also have had a therapist one time told me this, and I've never forgotten it, because I used to like wait, and then I'd like, we talk about it and be like this whole thing where like, it's funny. I feel like if you bring something up when it's like just the littlest bit like on your mind versus like you have like a 30-second conversation about it and the other person's like, great. Like you're on the way to dinner. You're like, hey, by the way, this would like really mean a lot to me if we did this instead or didn't do this. And they're like, cool. Whereas if you wait till it happens like 50 times, then you have a 3-hour conversation about it. So I try to like also just bring it up really fast, and then it's quick and it's done, and then they like forget about it. It's not a big deal. And I would want the same.
Such a good point.
For them. But I've struggled with, I think, I don't know if it's because some of the guys I've dated maybe weren't like okay with my success or my life, but I feel like they've gotten very resentful and very moody. I don't know if like moody is the right word, but have you ever dated a guy that's very moody? Because it is just not fun.
Oh, it is miserable. It is because then you're tiptoeing around them.
Everything's ruined.
You are on eggshells, and it almost, it's, you know what it is? I feel like that's so interesting. I've had that where because of their insecurity about your success, through the moodiness and through the like the lashing out moments, it's like a power tactic where it becomes all about them. Everything is on their terms, and you're kind of like, wait, are we still going to dinner, or are you pissed and we're just now going to sit here in silence? Yes. Like, what are we doing? And like everything is on their terms. But it's all like a manipulation tactic at the end of the day. And like, it may not be so manipulative in what they're doing. It's the insecurity that breeds this like, how can I gain control because I feel so out of control because she's the one in a position of power in their mind. Meanwhile, you're literally like in my success that has nothing to do with you. Like, I'm here in this relationship. Why are we acting like moodiness?
Oh, it is like, I would say that's something that immediately like within like. Immediately I bring that up to any new guy I'm dating. I'm like, this is a total deal breaker for me. I can't, like, a guy is allowed to be upset or in a bad mood, but when you take it out on me and you're mean to me and you like ruin something that we're doing together, that's not okay. But everyone is allowed to, everyone has good days, bad days. Like, if someone's in a bad mood and they're like, I'm in a really bad mood, but like, I need, like, I'm gonna go to the gym, or I need some space, or like, can we talk about it? Totally fine. But when I'm sure you've had, like, when you do something together and you're like, we just went to this concert. I would have gone with my friend. Right. I'd rather you have not gone. Or like, why are we going to dinner together if you're just like miserable? Like, I would have rather you told me and we wouldn't have done that. So I just, that is something I look back and cringe on. I'm like, I think because I'm a people pleaser and I tried, I really wanted to help them, I didn't realize there's like a difference between being supportive to your partner and then having them treat you not well. So I am learning that, but that is something like I immediately bring up to a guy. I'm like, I am like, that is a deal breaker for me, and I'm not going to be treated like that.
That's interesting. Yeah. When you look back at that, like, moodiness is like one thing, and I feel like now that you're talking about it more, it's a little bit more than moodiness, Allie.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm like, wait a second.
Yeah, it's I don't think I realized.
Moodiness is the people pleaser and you being like, he's just moody. I'm like, hold on.
No, I think it's yeah, you're right. Yeah, you are right. Add that to the list of therapy.
Right. You're like, hold on. Yeah. Write that down for me. Hold on.
Yeah, that's a thing that I'm like, that is a full-on deal breaker for me.
Like, not treating you right.
But it's interesting because I don't want to, like, you know, give into... Well, it's interesting, like, when you think about stereotypes, I feel like women are stereotypically told that we're very moody and, like, we're, like, on our periods and everything. And this is just in my experience, so I'm not trying to generalize, but like, the women in my life are not in bad moods. Mm-hmm. And I honestly like, or if they're in a bad mood, they'll like communicate with me.
Right.
But I really, there are a lot of men in my life that are, do not, and I think it's because our society doesn't let men be men. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt for a moment. But like, I feel like a lot of men in my life, and not even just in relationships, in different areas, will take out their bad mood on me. And I'm also like sometimes too nice, where I'm working on, I need to be better at being like, it's just, it's very hard for me. But it's really interesting because I'm like, why is there such like stigma that women are always moody, but I think because we're more open about therapy, we could call each other and be like, I'm having the worst day. We talk it out and we're good. Right. But I don't think men have that same outlet.
Okay. I think you're on to something and you're so right. I think it's this. I think women are more emotional in the best way because we actually express our emotions and we actually are trying to like constantly work through things. And the way that we get through it is most of the time communicating. Like if I'm upset, I'm going to say something. We all know that. We cannot hold back. Like,
are you good at saying something if you're upset?
Oh yeah, I've gotten better. But even when I was bad at it and I hadn't been in therapy, like it's gonna come out one way or another. It's just a matter of if it's coming out immediately or am I gonna go sit in the room for an hour and then I'm gonna walk out and tell him I'm upset. Like it's coming out. With men are moody, women are emotional. And I would way rather be emotional because at least I'm in tune with my emotions. The moodiness is this big twister of a storm of all these things. And it's like, poke the bear and they're so moody. And it's like, why are you moody? They can't tell you because they don't know how to half the time express their emotions. Bye.
I just wish men knew. Like, I find it so attractive when a guy is vulnerable and open. Like, if a guy, I think it's so hard to find a man who's secure enough in himself to be like, can you just sit down with me for a minute? I'm like having a really tough day or I'm struggling on this. Like, I would feel so into that and so attracted to that that I wish more men knew that that is so attractive. Yeah. And I feel, I have empathy for them that they feel like they can't. They have to be so tough all the time. Because it's so, there's literally nothing better when you're like on a date and you're just like vibing and you're just like so present.
Connecting.
Yeah, connecting about stuff. And it's just, it's really nice to have that connection where you both don't feel judged. Yeah. And you both can go to each other. And I think that that is hard to find.
Yeah.
And that's like, I think relationships, it should be, they should be hard to find because I think that's what makes like finding the right person, you know, more special.
In your 20s, what partners were you pursuing? Like describe.
Oh, I used to really go for the athletes, the professional athletes.
Oh!
And it's really hard to find a really good one. There have been a few very sweet ones and I'm grateful for that. But yeah, it's hard. It's hard to find a good one. I just think that
give me some qualities.
Yeah,
of theirs.
I definitely wasn't treated the way I think that girls deserve to be treated. Yeah. I think. Yeah. I think that was definitely my type.
Mm-hmm.
But I also will say what's interesting is like for years people were like, you gotta stop dating the athletes. And I was like, all right, I'll date like I'll go on a date with anyone. And I've been like so open. I literally would like if someone set me up with someone, I'm like, I don't need to see a picture. Like, I'll just go on a date. And I'd go on these dates and I'm like, okay, maybe I should be like, it's like finding that I was trying to like find the right balance of like trying to be more open because I also think it's like crazy when we meet someone, you feel a vibe and like, you know, you think about like maybe if someone showed you a photo of them, you wouldn't have maybe said yes. So I try to be like very open minded, but like even dating guys who are not professional athletes and like not in the public eye, like some of them are not great either. Right. So it just really just depends. I think that there's always like good guys and same thing with, I'm sure guys will say the same thing. There are some girls who they or women they've dated that are wonderful and others like we all have had probably good and bad experiences. But I think that what I've also learned, I'm curious what you think about this, is like I used to take it so personally when I was younger. Like if I dated an athlete, they were probably texting 30 people at the same time. Like if they're not looking for something, there's just most of the time there's no chance. Like they're not interested.
Right.
And it's not – I wish I knew like dating wasn't personal because I used to take it very personal when I was younger. And now I'm realizing – like at least for me, I feel like guys show pretty quickly like what they're looking for and what – they're interested in. Like I'd have a guy like years ago who like, you know, would like text me like once every, you know, 2 weeks or like barely take me out to dinner. I'm like, oh my God, do you think he's just busy? It's like, no, he's just not interested.
He's definitely not busy.
Yeah.
He could be busy, but he's also not interested.
Yes. Yeah. Like I think now I do a better job of not overthinking and just being like, they're either like, I saw something on Instagram that's like when a guy is into you, you know, if you're confused, it's just not it. Really tell myself that too. Like it doesn't mean, especially in the beginning, like every person has like a different cadence of how like even if, you know, sometimes I think people get so caught up in like, oh, if you're texting every day or doing this, like are they taking you out to dinner? Are they showing interest? Are they like you? I think that our gut is usually right and we should listen to that more because I think that that is something I wish I listened to more is like understanding that if a guy is like looking, then they're looking. But if they're not, it's yeah. like, it's kind of hard to, I think, in my experience, like change their mind.
I completely agree with you. And I think, though, what I have started to realize, I would say, in the past couple of years is like, I used to look at it a lot like, oh, I wish I would have done differently. And I actually, the only thing I would change about everything you're saying is like, I think that guys definitely do show you immediately like what they're kind of down to give you. And I think a lot of the times when we are not completely like full within mm-hmm. ourselves and healthy and good and like know exactly what we want, we ignore that and we just choose to like kind of see what we want out of them. And I think that's normal and that's natural because that just means you're not ready for that end game relationship yet. You still have work to do, because if you are going for someone that is mm-hmm. treating you like that, it's because you're working something out on your end of like, you needed to get this certain validation and you liked this one part of them and you're completely ignoring the part where they're like treating you like shit. And then eventually it ends because you wake up to being like, I feel like shit. Why is this happening? And then you go to the next relationship. And then maybe if you go for something a little different, it's because you're looking for something different to fill the void of XYZ. All of a sudden, the string of moments of dating all these different people builds you into this healthy person, because you start to just create your palate of like taste of like, I like this. I definitely would never go for that, because we all know it. You go on the date and all of a sudden you're like, I remember my ex did that. Nope, I'm not interested. And you're out. But you needed to learn it in the first place to even recognize it.
Yeah.
That's how I felt like when I met Matt, there were so many green flags. And I always say, had I met Matt when I was like 22, I would have probably not dated Matt, because I wasn't ready for Matt. So like, I think in a way, when you're dating, there's almost like a hopeful element I can give to all the girls listening of like, yeah. and you of like, this is really exciting, because you are like building this like repertoire of like memory and understanding, and you're just understanding what you like, what you don't like, and you're putting up with things, as shitty as it feels in the moment, that you'll never put up with again unless mm-hmm. you don't grow. And half of the battle is on you. When people are like, God, what, this happened to me again. Did it happen to you, or did you put yourself in that position again?
I know. I once had a male therapist say to me one time, he was like, I was just talking to him about dating, and he was like, why do you think you're attracting these people who are treating you that way? I was like,
pulling yourself out the window.
Okay, you have a point. I was like, but maybe you could say it a little bit nicer. But he was like, what do you think is like wrong with you that you're attracting people like that? And I was like, that is something that, like, I'm the common denominator, so like I have to. And also, that is separate from like if someone's in an abusive relationship. Yes. Very different. Like,
very different.
Very, very different. But for me, like, I just had to take a hard look at being like, I also go through phases where like I'll go on dates and then I'm like, I need a break and I need to take
dating fatigue.
Time. You're yeah, like- I need to take some time for myself. And it's really interesting, because like the times where I'm the most happy being single mm-hmm. and on my own, I like really try to think about, I'm only gonna date someone or let someone in my life if they just like enhance or add yes. to my life. And I think that really helps when I have that foundation of knowing what I want and what yeah. I'm looking for. But it's I definitely, like, the idea of being with someone when it's not right is just so lonely to me, and I just don't want that.
It's so lonely. And I need to find this article. I read it so many years ago that my mom sent me. Now looking back, I'm like, I think she sent this to me when I was in my previous relationship that I was miserable in. Thanks, Mom. And it's a little like diagram that this person wrote. And it's an article about how like someone that is single is one step away from a healthy relationship. Mm. Someone that is married in a relationship, in a miserable relationship, is three steps away from a healthy, happy relationship, because they have to remove themselves from that relationship. Then they have to get good on their own again. And then they can start to seek health and happiness with another mm-hmm. person. But it's like, that's so exciting. And you have to be so intentional about who you let into your space. But I agree. It's like, you have to get so good with yourself, because yeah. that's when you really start to attract good energy.
Yeah.
When you get out of a relationship and you fling yourself to the next, that's when you're just kind of like off balance, just trying to find anything that will like make you feel happy. But for a quick moment, it's not like you're actually stable enough to be like, hold on, what did I learn from that relationship? Let me be alone for a minute. Now let me go find something better. It's really tough, though. It can get exhausting.
It is exhausting. I'm curious what you think about this, because I feel like a lot of people have different opinions on, like, when I go on a first date, like, yes. If I am not excited to see them again, like, if I'm even on the fence, mm-hmm. I'm not going on a second date. I'm curious what your perspective is on that. I just think it should be, like, easy and comfortable.
Okay. I have thoughts.
Okay.
This episode is brought to you by Experian. Hi, Daddy Yang. Do you ever feel like there are just too many apps for too many things? I know I do. I sometimes want to chuck my phone into a river and never look back. The apps just take up so much space on your phone, and it is hard to keep the name straight. It's like, how are we organizing all this? What are we doing? Well, there is one trusted name that you already know that can help you do the work of several different apps. Experian. The Experian app can help you cancel unwanted subscriptions, look for car insurance, and check your FICO score and credit report all in one place. You can also compare credit cards and loans. Save time and money by letting their experts negotiate your bills to get you the best price. Experian, the one-stop shop for your financial health. Download the Experian app today. Results will vary. Savings are not guaranteed, and some may not see any savings. Checking your matched credit cards will not hurt your credit score. State restrictions apply. Not all bills or subscriptions are eligible for negotiation or cancellation. Eligible paid membership required. This episode is brought to you by Aerie. Daddy Gang, we all love getting comfy in our oversized sweats. If there's one thing you know about me, it is that. And that is one of the many reasons why all the love goes to Aerie, a brand that's been changing the fashion industry with a message of loving your real self since 2014. So get real with me for a minute, okay? I understand we see on social media everyone looking glamorous. I post things myself that I'm like, ooh, I love this outfit. Here's the reality. 90% of the time I am in my sweats, and most of the time that is when I'm happiest, right? I love going to events occasionally, but most of the time I'm at the event, I'm like, literally get me home. I want to get in my sweats. Today, my reel is being in my sweats, and tomorrow my reel is being in my sweats. So how do you get real with Aerie? Click or tap on the banner to visit Aerie.com for inspo and new drops.
I was just having this conversation with a friend because she is dating right now. And she was like, I didn't go on a second date with him. And I was like, why? And she was like, I don't know, like the sparks weren't there. And I was like,
did they kiss?
No.
Sometimes you don't know until you kiss.
Right, I agree.
Sometimes it's like, I will say that, like, sometimes there's almost this, like, awkwardness.
Yes.
And then when you kiss,
you need to get out of the way.
Yes, yes.
I kind of, like, am so down for a first kiss on a date. Like, yeah. I actually condone it.
Well, you know what's kind of funny is sometimes, like, I feel like it's funny. The guys who are, like, comfortable just, like, grabbing you and kissing yes. you on the first date, I found sometimes they're just, like, so smooth, know what they're doing, and maybe they're a little bit more of a player.
Yes, I agree.
But, like, so it's – and then sometimes the guys that are a little bit more timid, not always, yes. but they're just, like, trying to be, like, really sweet and respectful. Yes. And it just depends on, like – their experience. Like, I if you're agree. Dating a professional athlete, like, they're
grabbing the back of your neck and yeah, you're like, yeah, yeah. romance. But yes. then, like, 3 weeks later, depends. You're like, hello?
Yeah, yeah. You're like, wait, you just ghosted me. You just told me you wanted to date me, and then you just ghosted me. What
I
just
thought
happened?
We were getting married. Yeah. Gone. Okay, that
it just this, depends. Yes. It depends on who it is. You have to, like, know the person.
Yeah.
So I think it depends, like, I do. Yeah, whenever
Here's my
I
have theory.
A yeah, okay.
Okay,
ahead.
My theory is this. What my friend said to me was, she was like, well, you said that, like, you and Matt had sparks immediately on the first date. And I'm like, that is true. However, I have been in love before, and I have been in love with people before that I didn't feel the, like, insane spark on the first date. And so I think my new rule that I tell my friends is, unless it was, like, so bad that you were, like, whether it was how they spoke about something that you're like, I don't like the way they spoke about, like, their family or their mom, or like, whoa, that was a red flag. If it was like it was a good date, like, I don't know if the vibe is there, but I can't tell, like, go on the second date. Because I feel like first dates, unless you are a fucking pro, and then yet again, why are you a pro yeah. at first dates? Yeah. It is yeah. like harder than a job interview, in my opinion, because a job interview, you have your piece of paper and you're reading your exact qualifications and it doesn't actually matter that much on your personality. This is like every fucking thing of the delicate dance of your looks, your, are you funny? Are you charismatic? What's your personality? Do you vibe? It all has to match perfectly in 1 hour at a dinner. Like, give it a second shot. I think once the second date doesn't go well, never see them again. But if it was like a, I don't know, I would say try it again. And I would say try a different vibe than the first date. So if you did a dinner, now go do an activity. If you did an activity, now go sit down and have face-to-face dinner. I would say do a second date.
I think it also depends on if you're dreading going on a second date.
Yeah.
Don't, but I think if
check in with yourself. Check in with yourself, because I used to do that and it was like, am I dreading going on the second date? Does it have anything to do with him? Or am I being lazy? And am I being, and when I say lazy, I'm not actually being lazy. Am I being like, I want this to be easy. I wanted to feel it immediately. I wanted the spark to be there and I wanted it to be a done deal and I wanted to be like, boom. It's not easy, because do the work in the beginning, because then once you actually in a relationship, like, that's also another set of just hell where you're like figuring out each other's trauma and boundaries and family shit. Like, the first date, I don't know. I don't think we can count people out unless there's a glaring issue. You're like, okay, let me open my phone.
No, I feel like a lot of people say that. But what do you think about if you're on a first date or a second date and you kiss and the kiss, you don't feel that I don't want to use the word spark because I feel like that's like unrealistic, but you just
connection.
It's not there. I think if you don't have that like physical, like sexual chemistry in the beginning, I don't think you can like create it.
I completely agree. Okay. And I think
that is so disappointing when that happens too.
It is so sad because you are like, worse is when if you went on a first date and you didn't kiss and you go on a second date and you are like kind of fantasizing about it. You're like walking around your place. You're like drinking your coffee in the morning, like picturing, like you're almost like creating like a movie in your head of like what it's going to be. And then it happens and you're literally like,
I need to go home.
You're like, oh God, I'm never going to see you again. And that was not. And then when they're into it and you're not. Well,
that's what I was going to say too. I sometimes feel like, do you think that like, we are sometimes more picky about that than men?
Yes, because I think that you also then don't know their intention completely. Are they just hoping that they're going to sleep with you while you're like, oh, I'm actually like looking for a partner? So they're like, hey, Allie, that was amazing. Let's go back to your place. And you're literally like, I hate you. Like, I literally felt nothing below the belly button. Like, we got to go home. I think that men are less picky because men are just like dogs and they're just like, oh, that was great. Meanwhile, it's like, no, that wasn't great. Like, what about that was great, Daniel? Like, that was bad. Like, leave me alone. So, no, I think you're on the right track. I also think everyone is different, but I don't know, ladies, maybe this is like the year of second dates, because then at least you're training yourself to maybe then you can just start knowing in the first date, but start pushing yourself to see if there is a shift ever on the second date. And then maybe there is. And then you're like, holy shit, maybe I need to stop counting people out. Because what I said to my friend was, she was so cute. She was like, you know me, I can be a little socially awkward in the moment. And I was like, but think about this. How many times have you told me, I wish people knew me, like in settings with like all of us and our friends when I'm the most comfortable? You wish that people would give you that. So give that to the other person. That.
Wow. Okay.
Right?
You have convinced me.
We're going on a second date. Okay, get your phone out, girl. We're like, I think it's, listen, there's no harm in it. And what I can say is, if you are super anxious about the first date or second date, you could do it as like a drinks or something that you have somewhere to go afterwards. So you always have an out. And then if you're vibing, be like, let me cancel my fucking dinner. Like, let's actually have dinner together. Let's go down the street. But you can always give yourself an out. Like, I have like an hour before like a work thing I have to go to, like want to meet for drinks. Like, it doesn't have to be this fucking three course sit down dinner where you're literally like at the appetizers and he's eating his calamari and you're like, oh my God, I literally hate you.
Yeah, like, I'm stuck here for 2 hours.
Like, this is a waste of my life. Yeah, like, don't do that.
That is
grab
just,
a
like,
drink.
The worst when they're just like, you just know right away. You're
You're gridlocked. You're literally
you're just like, oh. But also, I will say, sometimes you like go on a date with someone and you are like, you are the nicest person. You are going to be an amazing.
You are just not
you're amazing. You're going to make some person so happy.
Not me.
No, it's just not me. But it doesn't, that's what dating isn't personal. It's like, I've gone on so many dates where I'm like, you're just like so wonderful. I have nothing bad to say about you. But it's just like, and it's the same with men I've been in serious relationships with too. I'm like, you're so wonderful. It's just, there's, you know, when you're,
When was the last date you went on? Come on.
It was a few weeks ago. It was a few weeks ago, but I'm not sharing anything else.
Okay.
I'm not sharing anything else.
Was it a first date?
Yeah. Not sharing anything else.
I'll keep saying that. Yeah. I'm not sharing anything else. You're like, Alex, I'm like, did it go well?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I'm not sharing anything else. I just keep asking if you're answering.
Yeah. I did. But that's all I'm saying.
Did you meet on a dating app or?
Nope.
Nope. should I keep asking? Okay. We're moving on. This has been fabulous.
I know, this is so
I'm like
fun.
Having the best time. I'm like, I could keep going. I love though, the biggest point that I love about you writing that article too was about calling out, like, I'm 30 now and like everyone's like, what are you doing? Like, you are young and you are beautiful and you are successful. And I think it's important, especially for women. I understand we have our biological clock. Don't rush into something just because of a biological clock. Like, what? Like, what? And be miserable with a random person that you hate just because, it, like, we're 30, time's up. Like, no. What are you the most excited about, like, entering your 30s right now?
Well, I feel like I'm most excited because I've been told for a long time that when you hit 30, you kind of care less. Mm. And so I'm like slowly getting there. But I think I'm just excited to like peel back the layers of who I am and just have more fun, focus more on my personal life. And also I had a friend one time tell me, it was at her bachelorette party actually. And this was years ago. And she just said, you have so much to look forward to. Like you still have like that. So for anyone who's single, this actually really helped me. It's like, you still have that like first date, your first kiss, like, you know, going into that like talking stage and falling in love. And like, there's just still so much to look forward to. And if you're in a relationship or you're married, you still have so much to look forward to as well. Like there's so much different beautiful variations and chapters of life that I'm excited to keep growing and evolving and figuring out who I am. Because I also think it's important to give ourselves like space and permission to, if you want to outgrow a friendship, you want to try something new, you want to whatever it is, like do what you want to do and do what makes you happy. So I'm starting to like care a little bit less, but
I think that's beautiful.
Can you tell I care too much?
No.
Too much?
You're like, I don't care, Alex.
Yeah, I'm like, I swear I don't, but I do.
Like, I literally don't give a shit. I actually think when you were saying that, it just made me think of something that is kind of beautiful. When I was reading that article you wrote, it was really interesting, you know, and you mentioned it earlier, like talking about comparison, right? Of Instagram. And it's like every fucking week you open your phone and it's like someone got engaged or someone had a baby. And I look back at when I was single and I talked about this recently. Like I have two different friend groups. One friend group is like all married and have babies. And I'm like the one last on the totem pole. And then my other friend group is like, I'm ahead of the friend group in terms of like my relationship status or whatever the hell you want to call it. And I realize like we compare ourselves when we're single to the people in relationships that are getting married and all that stuff. We need to stop because what I can tell you all is this, here's a secret. I am now married and now I'm comparing myself to the moms. And what I hear from the moms is then you compare yourself in your parenting style and where your kids are at. And then you compare what your, like, what is your life balance to your kids and your career? It's like the comparison literally never stops unless you stop it. And so, yes, it feels right now like this big point of like, whoa, I'm either married or I'm not. It's not just that. It's every fucking aspect of life is every fucking thing. Women are just, we keep comparing ourselves. Am I doing it as good? Am I doing it as good? And so I thought it would stop. Like, whoa, I'm about to turn 30 this summer. I just got married. And I'm like, it really doesn't matter that I got married. Like, oh, no, it does. Sorry, Matt. No, it does. It does. It does. I promise. But I mean, in terms of that, like, of course, it was amazing and beautiful. But I also would have been so happy if it happened at 35. You know what I mean? Like, or 40. Like, the timeline, we need to be nicer to ourselves because the comparison game, the next step you get to, that's a whole new can of worms of comparing. So, like, don't worry.
It's so interesting because for women, as you mentioned before, like, we have that biological clock. Yeah. And it's also, like, so unfair how inaccessible egg freezing is for women and how expensive it is. And I think it's so unfair because for the women that are able to afford it, I think for so many, it gives you sort of like a little bit more, a little bit longer timeline. Not yeah. a little bit, but probably a lot longer yeah. if you're able to afford it and you're able to even like take off the time you need for work and everything, where men don't have to worry about that. So it's very different. And I think it's so messed up how expensive egg retrieval is. It's so expensive. And obviously people need it for various reasons, but I think that adds a really complicated piece to it. And I also think that there's also so much pressure. I was going to put this in the article, but then I just like didn't. It's like a balance of not writing yes. too much. And
right.
But there's also so many people like don't want to be a mom, and that's also okay. Yes. And I think a lot of people feel guilty for that. And if someone doesn't want to be a mom or a dad, they don't have to be. And I feel like people are so judgmental. And I know, you know, for some of my friends that are married, like they must feel like everywhere they go, people are asking them, when are you having kids? And it's like, it's just not everyone wants to, but it's yeah. also so much pressure. And also so many people struggle with infertility, and it's just such a personal thing that people go through. Yeah. And there's just like so many layers to it. But I just think like I'm someone where I've always wanted to be a mom, and I'm excited for that. But I can't imagine like how frustrating it must be for people who don't want to be a mom, but maybe feel like they have to be, or because they feel the pressure. Yeah. yeah.
No, I love that you're saying that, Allie. And I think this is like, it's like the trickle down effect of like, I think a huge thing I'm also taking from this, and I try really hard, like I never ask people in interviews, like, do you want kids? Because it's like, we don't know anything behind the scenes. Kind of like when you said, when people ask me, why are you tired? Literally stop, just stop. Stop asking people, like oh my God, the minute I got engaged, when are you getting married? When are you having kids? I'm like, oh my God. Like, some of these people feel so entitled to answers that they have no business having or even asking. And I feel like we need to stop asking people, do you want kids? Or, oh my God, when are you getting married? And like, are you dating Allie? It's like, read the room. If you have now asked Allie or one of your single friends constantly every time you see them, imagine how annoying that is. Like, imagine how frustrating that is. Like, maybe wait, like, how, what's going on in your life? Like, how yeah. are you doing?
Well, like, if I was in a like happy relationship, like, you would know. Exactly. I will tell you.
Exactly.
Like, they'd be here with me. You'd know. Exactly. You know, but sometimes it's, yeah, I was at a group dinner and someone actually that I didn't know the other day was like in front of everyone, and they mean well, but yeah. they're just like, so Allie, like, what's the dating life like? And what, like, are you dating anyone now? And I'm like, after being asked 10 times that day, I'm like, I just, why is this always have to be the conversation? Yeah. Like, why can't it just be, it's just all the time.
Right, like, what have you been up to? Like, do you have like anything fun you're looking forward to? Yeah. What are you up to this summer? Like, I think that I would just say, Daddy Gang, like, be more cognizant anytime you're asking your friends, whether they're the single friends, whether they're the married friends, whatever it is, like, be mindful and read some context clues of, like, if your friend hasn't brought up kids to you, maybe it's because she doesn't want them, or maybe she's having a hard time with it. Like, being a little bit more generalized in our questioning and like letting them answer what they want to answer about their life, and stop leading with like something so pointed that kind of puts them on the spot. It's like, excuse you.
It's like shocking, I think, for people. The reason why I also want to do the article was because it's like, how often do we hear someone be like, I just turned 30 and I'm feeling better than I have in a very long time. And I'm also like, I'm okay with being single. Like, I'd rather be single and wait until I have a good match. And I also feel like, as a woman too, I don't know if you ever struggled with this with dating, but I felt like as I got older, I have this, I'm like, I really hope that guys don't perceive, just because they know my age, that I'm like desperate, or like, you know, that like perception of I feel like, I hope they're not thinking I'm just like in a rush, because I don't have a timeline. I genuinely don't. And I think you can
point to that by the way you speak on your dates of like, yeah, like, I'm just like, I'll be honest, I'm dating and I'm kind of just like looking for people that like I like to spend time with. Yeah. And like, I'm not in any rush to do anything. I'm just like looking for like a good person mm-hmm. to like hang out with and spend time with. And like, I think the way that you speak about it
yeah.
can immediately disarm that concept of like, yeah. no, you're not desperate. You're actually like better than ever right now. And you're like working on yourself and no one is going to get to just come in and like be your partner. They're going to have to be really fucking great. Okay. Last question. What is something that you've learned about yourself recently that you wish you had known in your early 20s? Ooh,
good one. I wish that I trusted my gut more and just listened to that more. And also realizing it's okay, in fact, important to be myself. And I found the more I figure out who I am, the more the better relationships I have and the more fun that I have. So, yeah, I think trusting my gut.
Allie, I cannot thank you enough for coming on. This was like one of my favorite conversations.
Oh my gosh.
I just feel
I'm
like
so honored.
We hit so many different points. You are so smart and just like such a fascinating human being. And I really appreciate you opening up because I just know this episode is going to touch so many women. And like you really went in so many different directions that I'm like, I have no questions left.
Oh
like,
gosh.
You killed it. You crushed it. Thank you for coming on. Like, I'm so happy we finally
Thank
met.
You.
And now let's go hang out in Paris.
Oh, my gosh. Wait, are you going to be 30 in Paris?
No, August. But we'll do
Oh, that's
pretend.
Fine.
We'll
yeah, pretend. we're going to be like our 30.
Pre-celebrate.
Like, yeah, we're going to have. Okay.
Perfect.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having
Thank
me on.
You.
This was so
Thank
wonderful.
You. This was amazing.
This episode is brought to you by Hydro Flask. If you're like me, you want to keep hydrated and express your style everywhere you go. I want good skin. I want to be radiating, okay? And I know that comes from being hydrated. And when it comes to keeping refreshed and giving off vibes, Hydro Flask has got you. They have loads of colors and designs to match whatever your vibe is. You can even create your own unique Hydro Flask, choosing the color for your cap, strap, bottle, and boot. And you can even engrave it, okay? Just choose your style on the My Hydro customize page. And you can bring it to the beach. You can take it on walks. You can have it on your desk. So, Daddy Gang, with new styles dropping all the time, check out hydroflask.com.